power. Get your freaking bathroom light bulb off the grid, something, you know. So by doing that, turning it into that, then it's kind of, that's really the energy you're going directly after they, them, those. I mean, you go into, you know, petroleum and you're going after they controlling the grid and we got a meter. Yeah, you're really starting to have an impact, especially here in Arizona where you have, heck, you know, we had a gentleman, he was one of the delegates to Ron Paul in Tampa, and he's a wealthy Mormon in the East Valley here that was involved a lot in Republican politics. And now he's going up against Salt River Project because they're trying to penalize him for being very effective in solar. He has a 2,300 square foot home. He's on an acre. He has two electric cars, Chevy Volts, I think, and his entire energy and transportation bill for 2014 was $198.
Okay.
And they are like, hell no. we do not wish that replicated. This is getting to be a thing. Now, the utilities loved it when they were getting subsidized and it was going to some credit, a percentage of new power generation was on somebody's house or whatever. So then when you got Solar City, you know, all of a sudden they're the largest power producing utility in the country. His solar is going stupid, and as you know, Tesla releases all his patents. Daimler-Benz is coming out. You know, Mercedes is coming out with their own battery pack to compete, you know, on home. They're starting to do all of the big manufacturers doing all electric cars. The infrastructure for that, which is what Elon was doing with their superpower state. All of this is what the answer is, and I'm going na 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 freaking na. So I don't know. You know, how else to do it other than have fun doing this kind of stuff? I just want you guys to know about it because then we can watch it. All right, here we're coming back.
Work, broadcasting the latest liberty-oriented audio content 24 hours a day at LRN.fm.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Come up with, you know, kind of, yeah, I need a better understanding of what's happening, what's going on, who's doing what, and certainly James Bovard from, you know, in the belly of the beast there, and what we're going to do, and I go, you know, pay attention, you know, take a look at Arizona, you know, watch right now, we got the Constitutional County Project, some of the guys are doing, we have, you know, different, you know, solar things, and getting off the grid, and growing food, and Jade Elms going, what shall we do? Because he has, you know, that's one thing in your writings and what you're doing, you're sharing. Have you done this? You've done this for decades, and you get a lot of support of the freedom community in your efforts here. How easy is it for you to get, you know, some of your viral articles going all over the place? Are you plugged into the man now, or are they just looking to fill space? What's going on?
Plugged into the man, meaning, you know, Ernie, I don't know. I don't have a good answer on that, but. Something which I appreciate is there's a lot of folks out there that that when I have a story in USA Today or Washington Times or Barron's or other places, there's a lot of good folks who will tweet it or repost it on Facebook, and that has been immensely helpful.
Well, of course, but I'm talking about even freaking getting in the Wall Street Journal to begin with. I mean, you know, how they're going, well, let's put James up there. He's one of... them, us, we don't care. It makes us look good. I mean, well, how the hell does that happen?
You know, you're asking me questions I don't have an answer for. You know, I don't have insights into how these places work.
Well, so you have some, like, they pull it from your site or you send it to an email list of all these different publications. You go, yay, another James. I mean, how does that work?
Well, Ernie, you're starting to border on business proprietary information.
Oh, okay. All right, we'll let it go at that.
Curtain of mercy time.
I'm sorry?
Curtain of mercy time.
All right. We'll do that.
That's a wonderful phrase from Mark Twain, from Tom Sawyer. And we'll just draw the curtain of mercy on this scene.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you're there doing this. And your books sales, I mean, is that something, and also a big thing in a lot of the presentations are talking to libertarians about how to make money, seeing as how you can go around the world doing whatever you want, and it's kind of residual. You do a documentary, you write a book, you have a channel of some article, you charge or something, and it's just you do a bunch, and they just keep you know, getting bought, and you start build up a residual. And I'm going, okay, so James has a bunch of books. I mean, is there one in particular that just has staying power?
Lost Rights has had the most staying power. I think Freedom and Change might be number two. I really appreciate how folks will still read and still mention Lost Rights. A lot of very kind comments on Twitter and Facebook about it, and a lot of kind comments, reviews on Amazon and on Goodreads and places like that. I'm happy. You know, it's unfortunate that the damn book is not out of date, because I was hoping that there would have been more of a backlash against government, politicians taking over damn near everything, but actually things have gotten a lot worse since then. It's fun to see how people react to Freedom and Chains. That's probably the most philosophical book I've written. And I was trying to lay out some basic truths there. And it's funny, that book came out in 1999, and some of the book reviews basically vilified me for being so cynical about government. And then 2 years later, you have 9/11, and it's easy for the president to start torturing people, to have total information surveillance, and to suspend habeas corpus, and to start wars on his own dictates and on his own false information. So it's fine to look back at the things that I've been called cynical for, and then what the government got away with afterwards.
You know, the Lost Rights was a very effective. It didn't matter. I mean, we were using it easy a decade after. You know, I mean, what he said. Now, remember, you had a big, is that the Hyatt Regency? Do you remember that here in Phoenix when you first wrote that back in 93, 4 or something?
I think it might have been 95. So
that was back in the day. It was, it was, so mid 90s, you're here doing a presentation. It was sponsored by, I don't know, maybe Bumper Hornberger Future Freedom Foundation,
I think.
I did it. And then, well, that's the first time I got to meet you. And a lot of the people that came there, it was interesting the wide variety of philosophical. They will go, well, he said, and there should be a government department of fixing that or something, you know. And we're just like, libertarians are sitting there going, wow. And the conversations at the lunch table and everything were very interesting. I remember a lot of them. But what happened was, in Lost Rights, what you did, let me just describe it for the audience, and you correct me where I'm wrong, is that it was all these stories of the protections that we were supposed to have with our Constitution and Bill of Rights and the laws, and what the government was really doing. You know, this is how they're attacking people on this, and when you're a dissenter, you're not in with the program of whatever, and the SWAT team and of your rights on everything. And it was just a chronology of, or even just the pieces of all this tapestry of our rights that have been lost with this big brother government. And when you read this, it's hard to just or say it's not so. I'm wondering what the response to it. Yeah, we already know this, or we need to fix it. And why do you think it's popular now?
Well, I mean, it has some popularity now, partly because as time has passed, the government abuses have become more brazen. I didn't have anything. I had almost nothing in Lost Rights about torture, but after 9/11, torture became part of the U.S. government arsenal, and some people were very proud of that and want to still have it. So that's a profound change in how government deals with people. When the government's openly allowed to torture people, and the you have Justice Department lawyers who want to use tortured confessions in federal court, this is like turning back the clock 600 years. And to be honest, I've been surprised that far more people were not mortified by that, but some people have gotten riled by it. I don't know. It's interesting. The Lost Rights came out on April 15th, 1994, and had a very difficult time getting print reviews for the first 6, 8, 9 months. The book was pretty much ignored by most of the mainstream media. It was very challenging to get excerpts printed in most places. But finally, it tended to catch on, and then did pretty well. There were a few talk show hosts. Gordon Liddy, especially, was very generous in his comments on the book, and really did a lot to push it.
You know, one of the other things is when you do the other books, you did. See, it was Bush Betrayal, and then the Obama administration was called what?
Not yet published is what that's called.
Ah, you hadn't even done an Obama yet?
Well, you know, it's...
You're waiting?
this is something which is I'm whittling on and just talking to folks, and we'll see what the womb of time delivers.
You know what might add to, we had, each president will have, you know, a category on Freedom's Phoenix, all right, Bush administration. Because sometimes we added to where we could do three categories. Something about war may also be Obama administration or, you know, foreign policy or something like, you know, some things need more than one category. Well, we put a lot of, Bush administration, man, that was ripe for all kinds of stuff. And I thought there was no freaking way that the category Obama administration would be able to trump, you know, in its scope of the crap than Bush administration. You go in that category and you read, you go, holy crap. There's no way Obama's going to be able to top this. Man, is he blazed by him or what?
Well, in some ways he has. In other ways, he's been not quite as bad. Part of my frustration is seeing what Obama has done on foreign policy, which is worse than what I expected, but then hearing most of the GOP out there saber rallying and very upset that we've not bombed Iran, that we're not bombing more of Syria, that we're not sending troops back into Iraq. It seemed like a lot of folks in Washington have learned nothing and forgotten nothing, but they're still pro-war because that's good for fundraising or whatever.
Wow. And real quick before the end of the show, and we'll go a little bit archived and get a full answer, but this TPP, Trans-Pacific Partnership, is that on your radar screen at all?
Not much. I'm 100% in favor of free trade. It sounds like I've not looked at this. I'm much of a secret, but it might have a lot of the same troubles that NAFTA had. I'm all in favor of free trade, but there were so many special deals and sweetheart provisions in NAFTA, which kind of, I think, had which caused a lot of problems down the road.
Yeah, it's crony capitalistic. We rule you, whatever. Yeah, it's not free trade. It's managed trade. It's you get to trade when we say you trade kind of stuff. Because that's what started me, my activism. Omnibus Trade Competitiveness Act of 88. When I read that, I go, well, isn't this fascism they told us about in junior high? I'm going, I just wanted to know. Yep, it is. Okay, just as long as we got that straight, you know. So this is, are we under occupation? I mean, is this country anything what the promise was? Or are we just under occupation by they, them, those in Washington?
Well, as long as the government's we the people, will be okay.
Yeah, when's that?
Next. I was trying to end on an upbeat note.
James, are you voting? Are you going to vote?
I'll vote for beer.
Yeah, let's have a beer. Does a lot better, and I feel better at the end.
You are six.
Yeah, this is this voting thing. I got to share this with you. If I want you to see, Donna, what episode did we have the Lucy Paul graphics on? Do you remember which day that was?
I don't, but I can check.
Go ahead and find that out, and just take the two graphics and email it to James, okay? And I'll describe it for you. You can see what's going on. At Pork Fest, a Porcupine Freedom Festival, we have two booths there. They're, you know, strategically located in, Agoura Valley, kind of whatever. And we're going to be sponsoring the Wi-Fi, and we're having a big vending machine that does Bitcoin, and we're selling stuff and just being buttheads. And Robertson Roberts, he sponsored this. It's a slot machine that they set up that has the wheels that are on it. There's different people, you know, the vote for nobody primary. I mean, you put in a quarter and you get the vote, and it's just, and you never win, right? You know, that kind of thing. So, but except when it hits Robertson Roberts, because they always pay, you know, that kind of thing. So we're having fun with it. So it's an anti-voting campaign deal. Well, what the Bitcoin Nut Bombs decided to do is have a vote for nobody primary. So you have all these candidates that, you know, vote for, you know, this guy as opposed to them, and the primary is won by who sells the most merchandise. So they'll have, like, Cthulhu, the most evil thing in the universe, and the guy with the octopus face or whatever, in a pinstripe Better Call Saul pose standing there, and the slogan is, why vote for the lesser of evils, you know? And
sure.
So you have that. And then you got a bunch of different ones that they have. It's kind of a you're still voting question mark kind of thing. Well, the one they go, what did you want? And I go, and the RAND campaign, and, you know, through a lot of different, and want to have the secret confab and tell me how, you know, RAND wants to, you know, tell me how anarchist he is, and really they're going to, and whatever, and it's just the public could get in that I don't play politics.
Oh,
I,
really? Is this something which happened recently?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. This has been going on for the past month or so.
Oh, really? And, so RAND's trying to get your support?
Indirectly and through the campaign guys and see if I'd be willing to go to and talk and kind of, no. They want to get the band back together. They want to do the Lovolution thing. See, the Lovolution, the whole thing was, is I didn't give a crap about, I never said vote. I mean, I, you know, precinct committee of we're going to walk the, who gives a crap. It was a cultural thing with me. You know, that's, you know, we met during the middle of that in Washington and everything. And I'm going, look, you know, it was how long could we keep Ron up at the podium? That was the point. And the only way that was going to happen was just the people like, hell no, try and take him off. So it was successful. In 8 and 12, he was the last guy, you know, to leave before they did the nominee guy. Now, of course, he pulled out, and that was what caused a lot of problems that they're facing now. So when Charles Goyette, yeah, I was very encouraging of him doing the fundraiser, the Kickstarter for Empire of Lies, Truth is Treason, Empire of Lies documentary he wanted to do about Ron's battle against. Did you see that effort that he was doing?
No.
Okay, if you went on, well, it's gone now, but, you know, for a month they did a fundraiser and they raised like $80,000, but they wanted $285,000, so they pulled it because they couldn't get enough financial support to do the movie the way they wanted to. And it came from a lot of the guys, you know, anybody that was involved, some of the big guys, you know, like, you know, Lyman or Michael Nystrom or myself or others, they were like, look, man, we busted our ass, made him gazillions of dollars. They can pay for it them damn selves, you know,
yep.
And they just keep coming one more time. We're going to into the breach and give us money. Nah, it's just it. So I kind of anticipated this and talked to him privately, and we'd support it and put the banner ads up. And I didn't want to be, you know, negative Nancy. On, you know, it would be nice to cap all this off with a good documentary like that, that I'm sure Charles would do a good job. But it just couldn't get the support, and nobody wanted, because they're just one more time to the well, and it'd just be serfs for them. And I'm going, yeah, I can see that attitude, you know. And fortunately, it didn't change anything for me, because I never gave them a dime anyway. I was just out doing my thing. And you want
bust an ass for them.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you want me to just give you money? You want me out there doing stuff way more than you want me to give you money, I guarantee it, you know. So what happened was that kind of, you know, fizzled just a week or two ago. Well,
oh,
then
really?
Do a search right now. Just go Empire of Lies, Ron Paul Kickstarter.
Okay.
You know, and they'll come up. And Charles really put a lot into this, and it just, but I bet it probably gets funded, you know, one way or another anyway. I mean, you know, it'll probably happen. They have investors.
This is the movie? Okay. Yeah, there's a bunch of things which are, yeah, okay, there's a YouTube thing for the Kickstarter.
It was a big full court press in the Liberty community. Everybody knew about it. They just didn't, you know, eh.
Well,
you know.
I just assumed that there was so much money raised in 2008 and 2012. So are they asking money to do the PR campaign or to make the movie?
Make the movie, $285,000. Charles takes care of it.
Wow.
So it was, I mean, it was, they had a lot of contribution in the form of production and a lot of, but you got to buy a lot of this footage, you know, and stuff. You know, that's where a lot of the money comes from. So it just costs money to do this stuff. Well, Tragedy and Hope, Richard Grove and them were here a couple weeks ago for a week just chilling, and they interviewed Patrick Wood, you know, the Trilateral guy, and they interviewed, you know, Stuart Rhodes came by, myself and Charles, and they just kind of used here as a studio and just took the week off and went to Sedona and chilled. Well, while they're doing all this stuff, we're doing everything we can to promote this. But they wanted me to go to people with the money, and I did a long time ago, you know, last year. I'm going, look, you know, guys, the money, I'm saying, hey, are you guys interested? Nah, he already screwed us a couple of times. He promised us he was going to go in 08. He pulled. He came into our home fundraiser, promised, and he pulled. And it was, you know, so I just kind of knew this.
Oh, interesting. So this is how the potential big donors view the Ron Paul operation.
Oh yeah.
Wow.
But you didn't see money going in.
Wow. Okay.
I mean, this is Charles Goyette with the endorsement of Ron Paul doing videos with Ron Paul. Charles Goyette sitting there saying, "I endorse this. I'm glad you're doing it. Let's go." The money didn't come.
Charles has great credibility, and
Yeah, it wasn't because of Charles.
Well, I've always been very impressed by Charles.
So, and it wasn't really, you know, because of Ron either. It was just, they're like, you know, we don't have them. We're not seeing, we're, no. And it's going to come out when? 2016. You know, is it going to be a Rand thing? I mean, it's just kind of, and I don't think it was, but, you know, it's just, ew. So here we have, the first calls I get, you know, of course, everybody wanting to know what I'm going to do with, you know, Rand running and stuff. And then there was, some students at ASU representing the campaign wanted me to help promote. I go, look, you give me banner ads, I'll put it up, promote that there's an event there on May 8th, and you can kind of in peace, and I don't care. You know, but I'll put it up, you know, for a week just to, yeah, it's over there, anybody gives a crap, and, you know, but you got, well, we were hoping you would, shit, okay? If you guys can't create a goddamn freaking banner ad, you know, yourself, and put it up.
Wow.
And, so they wanted me, what they really wanted me is in for a penny, in for a pound, and I'd start promoting and pushing, you know, something, right?
Wow.
And I'm going, because they are not getting the support from the Levolution that his dad did. They're not having the spontaneous kind of everything.
I wonder why.
Yeah. No. Then some other people from the campaign, well, you know, he's willing to meet privately or have private communicate, explain it to you, and really in our plan of whatever. And I'm going, look, I don't give a crap what he is privately. The only thing I care is what he's willing to say on that podium. If he's not willing to do his dad kind of stuff, then he's just a politician. Yeah, I'd bomb Iran if, you know, whatever the hell, fill in the blank. You know, that kind of bullshit, you know, that they're doing. So I'm just like, no, I'm just not interested. So then when they have this nobody primary thing, you know, my only question was whether if I do something, do I put Freedom's Phoenix on it or my name or am I associated with it open? Because I don't want to be, you know, so when the movie thing didn't get funded, that kind of freed me up a little bit. I'm, you know, I don't care, you know. So sure. I go, all right, the first bumper sticker is four cells in a Peanuts cartoon. It has Lucy holding the football and it says 2008. Yep. Let's vote for Ron Paul and there'll be real change. Yep. And, of course, Charlie Brown goes on his back.
There's something which Donna sent me. I've got it on my screen.
Yeah,
right now.
Okay. So you see the first one. Then the second one is Lucy Paul with the torch, you know, kind of thing. This time it'll be different. Well, the only thing was whether I put Freedom's Phoenix on that, which I did after they pissed me off. They were
that's great.
They were just going, yeah, well, I said, you know what? You just decide I'm coming out open on this. Yep, Freedom's Phoenix has this to say about that. You're still freaking voting. I'm not playing anymore.
Yep.
You know, I don't even know if Rand Paul's even have one single word to say about Jade Helm thing, and I don't really care anyway, you know. But it's just, they're playing politics, and the entire Levolution is kind of had the attitude that you did. You know what I mean? It's just
it's interesting because there are some things that Rand is doing good stuff on. It's good he at least made the effort to block the Patriot Act renewal. I'm glad he's pushing on those 28 pages on the Senate 9/11 report.
It's all issue triangulation, jingoistic bullshit.
Okay.
I mean, if you're really going to do, you know, do it, say it. Get up there on the freaking debate and kind of, and say it. But he's not going to. He's not going to, you know, pull. It's kind of this mamby-pamby. Well, we got to be concerned about, you know, Islamo-fascist kind of whatever. I mean, he's going to be 20% Rudy Giuliani, but we're supposed to be happy he's only going to say 20% of the bullshit.
That's bad.
You know, so we're going to find out. This is my concern, and behind, if I look at stuff, yes, and that's what they were telling me. Yeah, but Ernie, it's going to be issues. It's going to be surveillance stuff. We're going to go on. It's trending well. The focus group says kind of bullshit.
Oh my!
You know,
oh my!
It's not the same thing. And I'm just going, and they don't understand it. They can't get it because they're of the opinion that they're going to be allowed into at a deeper level of saying the right. I mean, what do you think was going to happen when Rand sprints to New York after getting the nomination for the Republican U.S. Senate race to go meet with Bill Kristol? What do you think that was about?
Maybe he was trying to set Bill Kristol straight.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm, you know, I love me some Israel, and Rand's bad. I mean, you know, I know how it works. So this is, you know, I can see it coming, and I'll use a lot of this to be able to, you know, free more minds. And I'm, you know, Trevor Lyman, when Nystrom made the switch to Popular Liberty from Daily Paul.
Okay.
And Lyman wrote something. And I kind of been expressing myself on the air, and I kind of, like in the archive talking this kind of stuff. But it was really, I think, these bumper stickers. And if I'm lucky, you know, Charles Schulz come after me. But, you know, it, we have this one run. You know, we're just going to do it at Pork Fest just to have some fun and really just to announce, okay, this is what I think about that. That's just, you want to know, quit bothering me, because you're not going to get the band back together because it's moved on. The voluntarist movement is, you're still voting. They're out building tiny houses, learning how to do aquaponics and getting solar. I mean, you know, they see it come. There is no fixing it. There's just, you know, them being it. They're going to be the change, and that's just the way it is. And they go, no, we need to, you know, and I go, what? You're going, what? And instead of it being spontaneous and you have a dozen kids out there busting ass, it's all this Student for Liberty or the campaign for whatever on campus of the official I Rule You and Got My Orders From. And I'm going, that's not how it happened. And it's not going to work that way. I don't give a crap what they do. And they'll get their, you know, little mini crowd of, you know, worshiping believers that, and all they do is call guys like me trying to get me to amp up again. I'm going, man, you don't understand why it happened the first time, and you sure as shit aren't going to understand why it's not happening this time, because you're not in the right mindset.
Well, I mean, it sounds I agree that there was a heartfelt sincerity that Ron Paul had, partly because in 2001 and 2002 he was one of the few people in Washington Congress who was speaking out against going to war, was speaking out against the war on terror from the start. I mean, he was taking positions that were intensely unpopular. They got him vilified yep. far and wide. And Rand Paul's made has taken some good, some much better positions than the other presidential candidates for the GOP. He's doing some of the best work in the Senate. But I mean, I don't see him risking the level of unpopularity that his father. Often endured.
No, it's all measured and it's all caveated and it's all politicking. And 12-year-olds pick up on that faster than anybody else, you know? Yep. So if you can't get the junior high kid to go, yeah, what he says, you're done, you know? Because these teenagers, because keep in mind, you know, I've like nosed the grindstone on this since early 07. I mean, hell, forever. But I mean, you know, for 25 years. But, you know, certainly then at the beginning of this, I could see now it's 15. How many years is that? That's 8 years later. So these guys that were 20 or 28 have kids and, you know, mortgage. You know, these people are there. They know. So everybody under 30 is kind of like, yeah, now we already see how we went down this road. They did a lot of the activists that are still a little bit active. They're starting to learn their lesson too. Were the ones that came in 12 after the 08 thing. They weren't the free-minded thinking. They're still kind of looking for the group collective, which way the wind blowing thing. So when the 12 opportunity came, a lot of these guys came in a more structured way. They're in on the precinct committee level. They're joining campaign for whatever the hell. They're, you know, supporting of having a meetup of the Liberty Rock monthly, whatever the hell. And they were being more structured. Well, a lot of that, you know, real on-the-street support people, they just kind of faded away into the community and were doing their own thing. It's the same thing that you and I saw happen with the Libertarian Party in the 90s. The Libertarian Party was the Liberty Nexus, and the more state-controlled and it's our turn and we want the brass ring turn and, you know, and we're going to get elected and vote for us and kind of mamby-pamby bullshit. When the real libertarians went on to do, you know, Future Freedom Foundation and antiwar.com and Mises Institute and, you know, on and on and on, all these different, you know, efforts of everybody just outside. The libertarian movement is bigger outside the party, you know, than it is in. And I'm going, this is exactly the same thing that's happening with the Levolution. And they can't grasp it because they don't want to. There's not a paycheck there.
Paycheck's the magic word. So, yep.
There's a lot of these guys. So, I mean, a lot of the criticisms that you, I remember you voicing, you had when we were met in Washington, you're going, yeah, but, I, that's exactly all the stuff that you were saying has happened.
Hey, Ernie.
But that's not where I was. I was outside of that.
Well, yeah, I was thinking back to the very pleasant dinner I had with you and Donna, and I think it was in late April 2008 when you were came by in Rockville, and I was thinking, yeah, I think I voiced a couple opinions, but mostly I listened.
like you have a choice with me. But yeah,
you made a lot of excellent points, and I very much appreciate your frankness and sincerity as far as how you saw how the campaign was going, because I was an outsider. I made some comments, some critical comments on my blog and antiwar.com, fully supporting Ron Paul and his message, but raising questions about, so what's going on here, folks?
Well, it was an awakening. It was, you know, curing their apathy, but towards what? So you can go vote? You know, Ron Paul cured my apathy. Good. What does that mean? Why voted? I don't think he cured it. But it really was more than that. It wasn't that. It was them. They got involved to be able to express a philosophy and an opinion. And then they take, instead of recognizing that, instead of building on it, instead of serving that, you have the lamestream so last century media, you know, they come in and they just try and twist it or counter it or bullshit it. And I'm going, okay, so what did you do? You just convinced all these people that are on the street sitting there watching this happen that you guys are liars. I'm going, okay, there's value in that, you know, and that's why I never discouraged anybody from, I just warned them. I said, look, when you get inside and you're doing this party thing, you know, because remember I have my lawsuits against the election law and all that bullshit. And I go, look, I already know where this goes. And they changed a lot of the laws, and it says, statute says blah, 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 or, and Trump's this is party bylaws of whatever they get to do. And I'm going, wait. When you can change party bylaws on the fly at convention and they have statutory power, I'm going, does that ring a bell with anybody? That's bad. I mean, I'm just want everybody to understand that. So when they did all this, they go, oh, when we go to Tampa for the national convention, oh, it'll be on international television, and they won't be able to get away with it because it's like live in international television. I go, what are you, stupid? That's when they do it. You know, I just, so in a nice way, but I'm going, look, you need to look at what happens. So when it does, they're going, okay, so what are they doing? They're doing this constitutional county project, northeastern Arizona, Navajo County, Sholo kind of area, and buying up 20-acre lots of land by the gazillions. And they're just wanting to be able to survive this thing. And they're learning to grow food, and we have big parties and the solar stuff. And we're going, and I'm going, you should come by. When the hell else are you going to go to Arizona again? What, you got something better to do?
I should come by. You know, I haven't been in your neck of the woods for a long time. I was...
J-Dam! We got all kinds of stories for you to write.
Yeah, well, I mean...
Got a place to stay. Got a place to stay.
Well, it's very kind of you, Ernie. I appreciate that. Don't know. I mean, I'm chasing... Well, yeah, I appreciate that very much.
Well, I tell you, when it's cooler times and you're freezing your ass off, it's always nice to come to Arizona.
Well, that's true.
I think about that.
I mean... That's, you know, there's a lot of good things about Arizona, and winter's one of the best.
Yeah, there's a lot of good things, but we're, you know, it's like the nail's always sticking up further in Arizona, so, you know, the man comes with their hammer. I mean, you know, oh, I see the nail sticking up again, you know, bam, you know. But then we, you know, do trash can flyers, so I, you know, whatever.
Well, it doesn't matter if the man hammers the nail, because you're there to hammer back.
Yeah, or just duck. And I go, that nail, yeah, it's at the Capitol. It's got a big, giant, shiny copper dome. Go hit that thing, and I don't care. You know, this, it's, but there is a lot of things that change because of just opinion. So that's where you come in, is I see that this is a battle of opinion. Opinion of what? Opinion they suck. You know, opinion that they're not the answer. Opinion that, you know, we can do it better ourselves. Opinion that I don't need them. Opinion that, you know, this international rule me global whatever sucks. I mean, it's just opinion. And we already have made such strides in the opinion of 30 and under, maybe even up to 40, that the people that are the Fox News, I mean, you know what the audience of Fox News is. All they sell is Viagra, Geritol, and freaking I need a diaper or something, you know?
That's true. Okay. Yeah. I don't watch it. I don't have cable. So,
yeah, I don't either, but you know, so whatever.
But that's the kind of things I've heard, but,
hey, well, thanks for spending this extra time with me. It's always good to get caught up with you. But, you know, give me, when we, you know, do this again, you know, keep in mind our conversation and kind of the Beltway, you know, RAND thing.